Thanks everyone for joining me. I'll just start off with a quick disclaimer. I like open science. That means a few things. It means that my code for the analysis that I conduct and present here is available on GitHub, and the presentations are available on figshare.com, including this one. All you have to do is remember to search by my last name. Also, you're free to copy or share or do any of those things with this work as long as you acknowledge that you heard it from me. Okay, so what is scaling? Scaling is the description of universal patterns between morphological characteristics like branch diameter, length, and surface area. Also, biomass is included with this. Those patterns then are consistent across size, age, and species. From exploration in ecology, we found that scaling relationships are consistent within and among all plants, regardless of size, species, or age. So that means that these emergent patterns might be used to illustrate similarities in physiology among all plants, exactly what it means to fundamentally be a plant or a tree. Folks might be more familiar with the term allometry, which is a close relative to scaling. In forestry and agriculture, allometry has a long history of research. The fundamental difference that I see between allometry and scaling is that allometry tends to be species-specific at an individual or stand level, unlike scaling, which is more broad in scale. There are many applications of scaling in horticulture. For instance, the idea of a training system is a human manipulation of tree architecture, which we have in various forms and yield efficiency is also another application of scaling, where scaling describes resource partitioning. Yield efficiency is cumulative yield standardized by trunk cross-sectional area. For an example of this, we can look at a study done back in 1998 by Grossman and DeYoung. The panel A shows the fruit dry mass standardized by ground area, where in a peach study of training systems, they demonstrated differences. However, those differences in panel B are washed out when standardizing by trunk cross-sectional area. So why then can a scaling approach be useful to horticulture if we are just demonstrating a bunch of similarities? This is something that I've been working up to for a number of years, and I'm very excited to announce that orchard fruit scale exactly like we would expect from the study of natural trees. Now, for example, what does that look like? One relationship that I like to talk about a lot is the mass to diameter relationship. The theoretical prediction is 8/3. After that ratio, the diameter is no longer large enough to hold the mass above the tree, and therefore the tree buckles under its own weight. Now, this puts up for those of you that aren't familiar enough with fractions, the decimal is 2.67. As far as an empirical prediction to that theoretical prediction, because we would expect branches to be slightly lower than that self-buckling rate, we want to focus on that 2.53 exponent. So this is data that I presented last year at this conference. The 8/3 line is shown here in bold, with data from both cherry trees represented by the red dots for each of the branches and a number of apple rootstocks. So how do those scaling exponents then relate to what we would expect? For all of the groups that I've studied here, we want to remember that 2.53, and it's super cool that that empirical prediction falls within all of the 95% confidence intervals that I studied. So these cherry trees and apple trees are not statistically distinguishable from the other expectations. I apologize, my slides are advancing automatically. So then what does that mean for a scaling approach? We can start using that baseline of understanding to find small differences that might distinguish varieties. That means that appropriate architecture for training might be able to be described by these scaling exponents, and optimum yield efficiency might be useful from the description of resource partitioning. And then as a feedback loop, consistent differences that we find can reveal important levers for developing and evaluating new varieties and orchard systems. So then, what does a scaling approach look like? This is an example that I've been going after here. I use the NC-140-2003 Golden Delicious Dwarf Rootstock Trial in Kaysville, Utah. I selected 6 rootstocks, increasing trunk cross-sectional area from left to right in your screen, primarily to have a large gradient in trunk cross-sectional area. For each of those trees, I destructively harvested 1 to 4 individuals for each rootstock at a segment level. For each segment, I collected data on diameter, length, surface area, volume, mass, twig count, and scar count. And I've broken those up into 2 groups. The first group is the estimated exponents. These bits of information are what is used to group pairwise for regression analysis, as are related to the scaling relationships and the estimated exponents. The other data that I collected that is not involved in this ecological theory, I just consider branch metrics. I can also group that data at a tree level, getting trunk cross-sectional area, height, spread for that tree level, and also the cumulative totals at each of the segment level. Again, this data can be broken up into estimated exponents and branch metrics. So step one of a scaling approach, I sought to locate differences among rootstocks in each of these things that I measured. For the estimated exponents, I was able to look in many places for those differences. I had different scaling levels. I've already introduced the segment level, which folks might be more familiar with the term internode. So that red line on the picture to your left is the trunk from the ground level to the first branching unit. We can also have segments anywhere in the tree, the second red line that's appeared on the screen. The second scaling level is path level, where the maximum branch path length is represented from any node. This node here, represented from the trunk, is essentially the longest distance from the ground all the way to a terminal bud. Subtree scaling level is the totals from any node. So for the entire tree or the trunk, the subtree is essentially the entire tree. But we can choose any node. So this star here notes the node, and the circle marks the subtree from that node. Also, since I'm doing linear regression, I have 2 parameters to choose from, the exponent and the intercept. So this here is an example panel of one of the scaling. This is the subtree level. And what you might do is just focus your attention here on this lower left panel. This is the length to mass relationship. I'm giving away my take-home message here. Anyways, the all branch estimation here I standardized to be 0. So this is the expectation, allometric expectation, of all the branches that I studied. And what you would do is, if you look at the rootstocks here to the right, if the 95% confidence intervals or those error bars overlap with 0, then there's no statistical significant differences. There are a few that you can see by glancing around. However, none of them were useful in predicting cumulative yield. What did turn out to be useful was the variance in confidence intervals of those estimated exponents, so the distance of those error bars. I also had those branch metrics, and I used a slightly different method in order to locate differences among those. I used a simple ANOVA and a post-hoc test, Duncan's multiple range. So this is the exhaustive table of all the branch metrics that I found significant differences within them. Again, this will be available online, so if you want to read and get a better close-up look of it, you're welcome to return back. For now, it's just illustrative of my methods. Fortunately, for my study, there were also significant differences within cumulative yield among those rootstocks. Step two is to correlate those significant differences that I found among rootstocks to cumulative yield. So this is the top nine predictors of cumulative yield that I found within my study. On the left-hand axis is the y-axis is cumulative yield, and the different branch metrics or estimated scaling exponents are on the x-axis. I'd like to bring your attention to the Geneva 2010 rootstock, now shown in red. And for each of these metrics that I used, the cumulative yield is higher than would be expected by the trunk size or tree size or body size of the 6210. I'll also bring your attention to Geneva 41, now shown in cyan, which also showed higher cumulative yield than we'd be expected by these four characteristics of body size. I'll also give a shout out to M26 appearing in yellow on the bottom row. That's where the cumulative yield is higher than would be expected by the variation in estimated exponent. I'm not exactly sure what that means physiologically, but certainly computationally it comes out. So what does that mean for my work? Again, orchard fruit scale like natural trees. I'm happy to discuss exactly what that means in more depth later on, but I'm very excited to make that claim. Branch metrics strongly relate to cumulative yield. The top two predictors of cumulative yield are maximum branch path length and total number of pruning scars. Variation in estimated allometric exponents also relate strongly to cumulative yield, those relationships being the mass diameter relationship at a segment level and the mass to volume relationship at a path level. So really the take-home message here at a horticulture or applied perspective is that the Geneva 210 rootstock consistently produces higher yield than would be expected by its body size. This is summarized by the yield efficiency or yield spread. Also, just as a take-home message more broadly, it's super important to standardize by body size in the experiment or horticultural research, as body size tended to best predict yield. You can use trunk cross-sectional area, canopy spread, or path length, or any combination of these metrics. So I'd like to thank my research mentors, particularly Brent Black, who wasn't able to be at the conference this week, and all these other folks that helped me out with my research. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Zachary. We have time for a question.
Yeah. I'm wondering, I know you didn't go into it, and maybe you looked at it a little bit, but I'm wondering about root architecture.
Sure.
Root biomass, the spread of the roots, and maybe just some thoughts you might have on how that might relate to some of the metrics you looked at, if there's any correlative.
Yeah, absolutely. So we did do a trial of the roots. We went out and cored the root samples from a number of the trees. Unfortunately, Brent's goals were a little bit different than mine, and so the rootstocks don't entirely overlap. As far as a relationship to cumulative yield, the overall bulk root mass, so they took a backhoe and picked it up out of the ground and then weighed that. Just that indication of body size was the best predictor of yield. So again, as a tree gets larger, it produces more fruit. That's pretty intuitive, and that's largely what I found from that exploration. So I'll be using a distribution mapping and things like that of the roots, and hopefully that'll be coming out later on.
I think G210 has a honey branch.
Okay, one last question.
So you said that one of the main predictors was number of pruning scars?
Yeah.
That essentially the same thing as node production?
It might be. So the question was, do the number of pruning scars, do I have an explanation for why that predicts with yield? I think one thing, like I keep coming back to, is that a larger tree is going to get pruned more because the goal overall is to reduce the vigor of these trees. I think it might also just have to do with more vigorous trees producing more branches, things like that. Definitely something that I'd want to explore in the future. Thanks so much.
Thank you.